Welcome. Welcome. I'm so glad that you are here. So glad. Thank you for coming. Let me start with a story. Some of you might know the story of Jacob. And I'll tell you the story of Jacob wrestling with the angel, which is what we all hear about, started when he was a young man, when he stole his brother's birthright. His brother was out in the field. His father had asked his brother Esau to go get him something to eat. He said, I want you to get me something to eat, and then I will eat, and I'll have a good meal, and from that good place, I'm going to give you your blessing. Because as the oldest son, Esau was in line to get the blessing from the father. And when Esau went out to go get some food, to go hunt the food, and have his mom make the food, his mother went to his other brother, Jacob, the younger son, and said, I have an idea. I want you to go to your father. And Isaac was blind. Isaac, you might remember, is the son of Abraham, or you might actually not remember that. He's his son. And she went to Jacob and she said, here's what I want you to do. I want you to disguise yourself as your older brother, and I want you to go in to your father, and I want you to take the blessing, the birthright blessing, Esau's birthright blessing. And Jacob said, well, you know, my father's going to be able to tell I'm not Esau. My voice is different. And of course, Esau was a really kind of a hairy guy, and he was very smooth, Jacob. And his mother gave him skins of goat skins to put on his arms and to put on his neck. And she put him in Esau's clothing so the smell of the older son would be on him. She prepared a beautiful meal, sent him back into his father. And there's Isaac saying, is that you, my son, Esau? And he goes, yes. He goes, wow, you really got that food really fast, because I just sent you out to kill it, and here it is all prepared. He goes, well, the Lord provides, you know. And so he took the food, and Isaac, blind but wasn't convinced, he said, are you really my son? Is this really you, Esau? He said, come here. And he felt his hands, and he put his arm up in hand, and he felt around. Sure enough, he felt as hairy, and he came close to him, and he smelled like his older son. So he thought, okay, it is you. So I'll eat, and then I will bless you. And he did that. He blessed Jacob with Esau's birthright blessing. He got it, and he got away with it. Okay? When Esau came home, he was completely livid that this had happened. And he said, I am so going to kill you for what you did, because this is a horrible thing. It didn't belong to him. He had no right to do this. And his mother said to Jacob, his mother goes to Jacob and says, look, okay, whatever curse might come, I'm going to take that curse upon myself, because this is something that had to be done. She felt this had to be done. Sometimes we do things, and it is from a place that we're not even sure why we do it. It's in that gray area, but man, we're compelled to do it. She felt compelled to make this happen. She said, I'll take the curse on me, because she felt she was fulfilling a covenant that was deeper and bigger than the destiny you can see with your own eyes. So she said, I'll take the curse on me. You go and live with my brother. Get out, because your brother will kill you. It's best you just get out now. And don't worry about it. I'll take care of everything. So Jacob takes off. Many, many years later, he goes to Laban, he marries one of the daughters, he works in service for her. His whole life happens. That piece of his life happens. And one day he wakes up and says, it's time for me to go. I want to leave this house, and I want to go back to Canaan and be with my family. I want to see my mom, and I want to see my dad again. So by this point, he has done a good job, and he has lots of goats and sheep and donkeys and mules. He's got a lot of stuff, okay, like the stuff we have in the storage units. He's got tons of stuff, but they had no storage units, so he had to take it all with him. So when he moved, he had to move the whole entourage with him. And he took his entourage, he took his wife, he took all his kids, and he began moving towards Canaan until one of the men who goes out before the party just to make sure everything along the path is okay comes back to him and says, I just met with your brother, Esau, and he's coming to meet you, and he's got 400 men with him. right? That moment of karma we all wish on other people, but not on ourselves. So he's got 400 men, and he is freaking out. He does not know what to do because he knows why it's happening. It's not like he doesn't know. He knows what's about to come. And he says, the messengers return, and they say he is coming, and he has 400 men, and here's what he does. He prays, right? We go right to prayer when that moment comes because he knows this is his enemy. He made an enemy out of his brother. And this is his enemy come to take revenge on having stolen the one thing that is most important to the eldest child, and that's the birthright. And he says, oh, please, God, deliver me from the hand of my brother. And anybody who doesn't pray in moments like these, you pray. And he says, please deliver me from the hand of my brother, from the hand of Esau, for I fear him, that he may come and attack me and attack the mothers and the children. He gets an idea. And his idea is this. I'm going to give a present to my brother. He took a present for his brother of 200 female goats, okay, 20 male goats, 200 ewes and 20 rams. Sounds fair, you know, you're just reading. 30 milking camels and their calves, 40 cows, 10 bulls, and 20 female donkeys, and 10 male donkeys. That'd be like 40 iPads, you know, 60 iPhones, you know, your apartment in the Hamptons, your summer share in the Hamptons. He's given him a portion of everything he has. He's thrown every, and these will be handed. He says, I'm going to hand these over to my servants. And here's what he said he wanted his servants to do. I want you to go out, he says, in groups. The first group goes out with a portion of this gift. And when you meet Esau, I want you to say, these gifts are a gift from your servant, Jacob, to his lord, Esau. And he goes, then the next group, I want you to go out when you meet him a little behind the first group. You're going to say, these gifts are a gift from your servant, Jacob, to his lord, Esau. So what he's done is he's figured out, I mean, how much time do we spend trying to figure out how to manipulate a situation so we can make it work out the way we want it to work out? That's what we use our mind for. That's why we don't sleep at 2 o'clock in the morning. And we think we have a physical condition called insomnia, but really it's our mind working, trying to figure out how to make something change, how to make someone change, how to change their feelings about us, how to help them see that we were right all along, how to have that discussion we had months ago, and how to do it differently so we come out on top looking good. The whole thing about the ego, Eckhart Tolle says, the ego of which we all have, is about positioning ourselves. It's all about showing us in the best light, proving that we are right, which is why the Course in Miracles says, do you want to be right or do you want to be happy? Because you can't be happy when you're sitting and trying to manipulate the pieces of your life to make everyone and everything move the way you want it to. And even though it doesn't work, that does not stop us from doing it. So he's got this brainstorm, and the brainstorm is, how am I going to fool Esau into thinking or change his mind or change his heart? I'll just give him everything, and I'll keep saying, I'm your servant, you're my Lord, I'm your servant, you're my Lord, and hopefully by the time he and the 400 men come, he will be softened, and he'll like me again. So when I was in New York City and I had just recently moved here and all my money in Boston, I was living very nicely in Boston, I brought all my money that I had made and went to look for an apartment in New York, and, you know, all that money actually added up in Boston to a beautiful house with underground parking and shopping right near me and 15th floor and a balcony and a view. I mean, I lived luxuriously. Translated into New York terms, I could afford a place on the Bowery. That was a room that was 9x15 with the kitchen in the 9x15 room. And the only thing outside the 9x15 was a bathroom, one closet, one coat closet with all my boxes, one coat closet, which meant all my stuff had to be stored in the hallway. And when I moved in, this was all I could afford. What I did not realize was down on the Bowery, it was a nice little renovated building, but you can renovate the beauty of the facades, but the walls and the structure are still as old as they ever were 200 years ago. And all the mice that traveled through the structure of the system of that old building, why, they didn't hear the place was renovated, right? According to them, it was just the same old place. So the hundreds of mice that were running through the walls every night as I was laying on my futon on the floor, listening to the mice running through, and here is the issue. If you don't have a phobia with mice, then it's just creepy. If you have a phobia about mice, then you're totally frozen, solid, like a block of ice. And nighttime became a hateful, hateful time because the lights went off and you just could hear everything. And I had been there 3 months. And the third month, that last night, an upstairs neighbor, really nice guy, had a party. And he invited me to the party, and I went to the party with everybody else. And the party was over at 12, 1 o'clock, and everybody was leaving. And then everybody left, except me. You know, he was making those overtures like a nice host, you know, like doorway. You know, whatever those nonverbal things, doorway, time to go, thanks for coming, see you tomorrow. And I said, you know, I actually can't leave. I just couldn't breathe at the thought of doing that. And I am certain that my inability to breathe facing that phobia, facing this situation, was not unlike the inability of being able to breathe that Jacob had when he heard not only was his brother coming bad enough, but he was bringing 400 men with him. This wasn't a pleasure trip to Disneyland Esau was on. He was bringing 400 men. And if you're traveling with 400 men, you're traveling for a reason, to get something done. And he knew that. And if you can just imagine the terror of that. And we try with our minds to figure out how to get to the other side of it. I had talked to myself, get over this, get over this, get over this, get over this. And I couldn't. All I could see was this army of mice. Hundreds of them. One day eating through the sheetrock, which I had known they could do, even though people said, oh, they don't bother you if you don't bother them. Oh, yes, they do. They do. You can hear them gnawing at the sheetrock on the other side of the wall, and their objective is to get in where the food is. And all I could feel, all I could see, was defending myself against this army of something that was so overwhelming that I would not be able to control, because there was no way in the world, no way in hell, that Jacob was going to win this fight. Let's be completely honest. And there's no way living in New York over the subway system we are going to win the battle with mice either. Not possible. That's why Rumi says, close your eyes. Close these eyes, the human eyes. Close your human eyes so that your other eye may open. Because when your other eye opens, your deeper eye, the eye of your heart, the eye of your soul, the eye of your divine mind, you're going to see the situation in a different way. Jacob is on a mountain. He has sent everybody away, everybody, because he did not want everybody to be killed along with him, because he knew that was the inevitability of it. He knew a storm was coming. This is from a poem by Rilke. It starts, it's called The Man Watching. It starts this way: I can tell by the way the trees beat after so many dull days on my worried window panes that a storm is coming. The storm, the shifter of shapes, drives on across the woods and across time. What we choose to fight is so tiny, and what fights with us is so great. Our fights, Jacob's fight, was how do I figure out how to make myself get out of this jam I'm in? My fight was how do I figure out how to get out of this jam I'm in? When we use our human eyes, our sole goal is to defend and protect ourselves against the jam we're in and to make it work out differently. So he is by himself. He goes through this night and he is in terror. And that's what a phobia is. You are in terror. It's irrational, but you cannot help yourself. You cannot breathe in the face of the terror. You're not seeing the face of God. You're seeing the face of your enemy, which is why the Tao Te Ching says, when I and enemy exist together, when we think we have an enemy, there's no room for my treasure. That's it. Our treasure is gone if I think I'm dealing with an enemy. I'm not breathing. I'm not thinking. I'm not going deeper. I'm not seeing. I am just a pillar of fear. And from that place of paralysis, we can't act. We can't see. We can't know. We can't think. We're just pure fear. So he is up on that mountain. You know what prayer he's praying is, get rid of this problem that I have. Get rid of these mice. That's my prayer. Shrink this problem. Who wouldn't pray for that? It's logical. And all of a sudden in that night, something interesting happens. An angel, and they call it an angel of God. It's not about angels. This is about energy. An angel of God comes to him and starts wrestling with him. Doesn't tell him why. Doesn't name who he is. Doesn't say what's going on. He comes in and he starts wrestling Jacob to the ground. And they wrestle all night long. It doesn't end. They wrestle all night long. Until the morning comes, daybreak comes, the angel sees it, and the angel says, oh, gosh, I gotta go. The dawn is breaking, and Jacob says something absolutely astonishing and counterintuitive, but out of his mouth, it pops. He says, I will not let you go until you bless me. It's outrageous. It's the last thing we want to do. And he says, I will not let you go till you bless me. And if you ask me for my money, this is a $1 million statement. That once you put it into place in your life in a situation where you're being pushed out of your comfort zone, it looks like some enemy, the boss, the ex, the neighbor, the child, the stranger, the government. When you put this into place, I will not let you go until you bless me. What you're saying is, I know that in this situation, there's something here for me. And I'm not even sure I know what it is that's here for me, but I'm not going to let this situation go until I understand how it's here to help me, until you bless me. When you can say such a thing, and you know what part of us says that? Of course, it's the soul. So I'm up in Nikki's house. He lays his bed out. He too has a futon. And somewhere I had read, you know, when you're a mess, you'll listen to anybody, right? So anybody who gives you an idea about how to help the mouse situation, you're on it. I said, we have to put candles all around this bed. He said, why? I said, oh, it keeps the mice away, I said. So we lit candles, we put votives all around the bed. We don't know if it did or it didn't, but on that night we didn't see any in his house, and he said he had them. I didn't even have them. I just heard them. He heard them and had them. But to be in his house with him felt safer for me. And I was in his house that evening. We stayed up all night, laying in his bed, his one little queen bed on the floor, and he said, you know what your problem is? And of course I knew what my problem is, the same way Jacob knew what his problem was. The same way if I asked you what your problem was, you could tell me what your problem is. And he said, your problem isn't mice. Your problem is you're not accepting where you are, and you need to accept what's going on in your life, right? He was able to see with the deeper eye in the way I couldn't. If we can't, somebody's going to come into our life and take us to that place. Don't think they won't. If you're in a place, see, he prayed, please deliver me, he said to God, please deliver me. And the deliverance wasn't that Esau turned around, got up one morning and said, oh, you know what? I really love my brother. I think I'll take my 400 men, who are probably soldiers, and head back away because you know what? I think I don't want to go forward with my plan to probably kill my brother. That's not how his prayer, please deliver me, was answered. The mice didn't magically leave my apartment. Our problem doesn't magically disappear. This is not a magic path to make our problems disappear because God suddenly hears our prayer and maybe feels sorry for us. It's not at all like that. A deeper eye is opened within us. And from that deeper eye, I could see what Nikki said, which was acceptance. I hadn't accepted one thing that had happened to me. I hadn't accepted the 9x15 apartment on the Bowery. Between the Bowery and Stanton in the East Village, that was not at all what my idea of coming to New York was. And I'm not talking about the East Village now, because it's so fabulous. I'm talking about the East Village 30 years ago, when you walk out and there are condoms all over the ground, and prostitutes and drunks and Johns right across the street from my door, using the truck parking lot to do their business. It wasn't at all how I had imagined I'd land in New York. Jacob had imagined he was going to have a beautiful homecoming with his family and go home and say, look, Mom and Dad, I've made something of myself. I'm a mensch. I hope you have a lot of nachas from me. Look what I've done. That's not at all how it played out. We go into our life expecting our life to go a certain way, and it's not at all how it happens. Why? Because the moment we get comfortable where we are, life comes in and nudges us outside of our comfort zone to take another step into a greater spaciousness of who we are. Every time we get comfortable, and take a look if in your life that is not so, every time you get comfortable with where you are and you think, I can hang out here a while, life presses us forward in an effort to grow us. Right? To grow us, and only the deeper I can see that. He said, I will not let you go until you bless me, meaning I got to know what this is so I can at least have a frame of reference for what is happening to me. And the angel said, because you asked, I'm going to give you a new name, a name that's far bigger than the name Jacob. I'm going to give you the name Israel. And the name Israel means I'm going to give you, and it's from the Hebrew, it means to prevail. I'm going to give you the power of a prince. Not the power of a regular man, the power of a prince. A far greater power to rule. A far greater authority than you ever had. That's who you're going to be. And because of this fight, Jacob walked away limping. He wasn't the same man that he was before. He suffered from the battle, but he walked away a greater man. And here is what Rilke says. When we win, it's with small things, and the triumph itself makes us small. So we won. We manipulated somebody. So we won. We got the better of somebody. We were right. So we won, we got somebody to change their mind and do something different. In our little, small ways of wanting to win, we walk away from the win, and we're still as small as we were before the win. What is extraordinary and eternal does not want to be bent by us. I mean, Rilke says, the angel who appeared to the wrestlers of the Old Testament, when the wrestler's sinews grew long like metal strings, the angel felt them under his fingers like chords of deep music. Right? Life plays us until a song, not a whine, until a song emerges from us. Whining is not a pretty song. Whoever was beaten by this angel went away proud and strengthened and great from that harsh hand that kneaded him as if to change his shape. Winning does not tempt that man. This is how he grows, by being defeated decisively by constantly greater beings. This is how we grow. When the storm comes, we let it come. When I went back downstairs the next day to my apartment and understood what the blessing was of having hit bottom, as Jacob understood what the blessing was of hitting bottom, that he was given a name that was stronger, I went down the street further to the east side to the pet shop, and it was a certain kind of pet shop, and I bought an aquarium, I bought a wheel, a hamster wheel, and I bought two mice, black and white, and I walked them home crying. I can't believe I'm doing it. All walking home on Houston Street with my two mice in the aquarium because I knew what I had to do. I knew what I had to do. I had to do it. I had to do it. I go into my little apartment and I lay it down. And I open up the top. It's mesh netting on the top. And I opened up the top and I did what I consider to be one of the top 10 bravest things I've done in my life, moving to New York, not knowing anybody was brave, but this might even been braver. Put my hand down inside of the glass aquarium and let the two mice come. Closer than I had ever been to a mouse. The next morning, Esau came. It comes. The storm is brewing and it beats itself against our worried window panes. And the fact is, we are invited to let that storm come because it shifts our shape. It has to come. The next morning, Esau comes, and here is what happened. Esau ran to meet Jacob and embraced him and fell on his neck and kissed him. And they wept. How in the world did Esau come to this place? It wasn't the donkeys and the camels and the sheep and the goats and the male and the female and all this. It wasn't all that. How did I go to another place with the mice? Was by opening a different eye that didn't see it as an enemy. Listen to this quote by Rumi. The seawater begs the pearl to break its shell. The seawater begs the pearl to break its shell. Life begs us to expand, to break our shell and come out and be who we are. Life begs us to be who we are. Life begs us to grow. Life begs us. It wrestles with us so that we may come out victorious. It fights with us and brings us all of the obstacles to grow us. It takes us to what we need to deal with in order to break our shell and come out to be one who prevails. One who rules with authority. One who, like a prince, has the power that is our birthright to have. Jacob didn't know he didn't need to steal the birthright. He could have inherited it on his own. And when did he inherit that birthright? Right at that moment. When he stepped into his own greatness and said, I will not let you go until you bless me. That's when he inherited his birthright. And that's when the world around him changed. Because he had changed. Because I had changed. Because we change. Not by fighting with the small ways of one-upping one another to get what we need to have. But by fighting, Rilke says, the good fight. This is how we grow, by being defeated decisively by constantly greater beings. When the storm comes as it must, let it come and let it change you. And even whether you win or you lose, you end up stepping into your greatness, which is your birthright, which waits for you so that you come out of your shell and become the person that truly you were born to be. Enough said. Thank you.